You are listening to FinOps Today, a podcast from Ramp, where the world's most innovative finance leaders share what's on their agenda. Here's your host, Ramp's own head of finance and capital markets, Alex Song.
Hi, welcome to FinOps Today. On this week's episode, we're speaking with Josh Reeves of Waldorf Farms. Hey, Josh, how are you?
I'm doing well. How about you today?
I'm doing pretty well. Technical difficulties notwithstanding, but we're recording and I'm happy. Josh, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Yeah, so I oversee the finance, accounting, and IT parts of Waldorf Farms. I've been here for about 9 years now. I started off in the technology side of things. And in 2016, a need kind of arose on the finance and accounting side of things. And I studied up, did what I could to learn as much as needed for, taking over the finance role. And not too long after that, kind of took over the helm of, all the finance and accounting, and still keep technology under my radar as well, and support the organization as their CFO today.
That's really cool. You know, we've recorded maybe 9 or 10 of these episodes already, and you have by far, I would say, the most unique background of anyone, right? Just in the sense that you didn't really start as a CPA, you didn't start in accounting, you didn't start in finance, you actually came over from the technology side. So tell us a little bit about that transition and how you wound up, in the CFO position.
Yeah, so there's a lot of similarities between the two parts of the business. You know, they're both very mathematical and data oriented. So I was fortunate that even still on the technology side of things, I was able to support and help the finance team building new financial reports and automating different parts of the business to help them do their jobs better. And from there, when the need came up, I took online classes, studied up on the nights and weekends to learn the technical side of the accounting and finance, and did what I could to learn from the team that was around me, joined peer groups within finance, within agriculture, found a couple mentors in the area. And between our CPA team that we were using and our attorneys and all the other resources available to me, just really dug in and tried to learn as much as I could to be able to provide the finance role that the organization was looking for.
That's awesome. I feel like, a lot of the times, especially, when people, stereotype and think about finance teams, a lot of the time, we think, it's pretty backward. We're using very old software, et cetera, et cetera. It's one of the things we're trying to change, obviously, here at Ramp, but it's really good. And it's really awesome to hear that, there are folks who are coming over from the technology side of the house who, become interested in finance. They want to modernize the stack. That's actually a very inspiring story.
Yeah, thank you. It's been a fun journey, and still rely very heavily on the technical side of things because finance is so technology driven anymore. When you're using the right software stack, and we're integrating and building off APIs and doing all these different things to connect financial data between our different systems, and eventually connecting those to our operational data to be able to provide high quality reports to our management and leadership teams.
Yeah. Shifting gears a little bit, tell us a little bit of Waldorf Farms. How did you come across these folks? How long have you known them, agriculture, and what do you guys grow? Would love to hear about what you guys actually do.
Yeah, so we're a family-owned farm that started in 1946 up in the Thumb of Michigan. That's what we kind of consider the home farm. So we're third generation now. That's the generation that's kind of running the operation. They're active in the day-to-day. And there's 9 third generation Walther owners, and then one non-family member that came by way of a merger that we did in 2018. So we affectionately call him a cousin, and it's still a very family-centric organization. From the Thumb of Michigan back in the 1940s, we've grown to about 13 different operating states or states that we have potato farms in. And then we have 2 trucking divisions that support deliveries to our customers, one in the east of the Mississippi, and then another division that operates mostly in New Mexico and Arizona. And, all those different locations and the trucking and everything that we do is in support of our customer base. and our customers are mostly chip manufacturers. So we grow Irish round white potatoes, and those are mostly used. Those are good varieties of potatoes to be made into potato chips. So we have customers all over the country, and our goal is to be able to deliver potatoes to them 365 days a year for them to process and bag and get out to their customers. So that's kind of where the footprint came from in the history, and all the growth that we do is, you know, solving customers' problems. And, you know, what problems do they have between transportation, timing of the year, things like that. Those are what intrigues us and allows us to go solve their problem and put together strategies to, you know, put together a new farm or be able to deliver, you know, reduce food miles in the system to, you know, reduce the cost to them, but then also, you know, things like GHG or greenhouse gas emissions, things like that. And, you know, all that we're doing by increasing yields and reducing miles in the food system helps achieve that goal for our customers and really all of us as well.
I know my potato chips. I love that. Are you allowed to tell us who your customers are? Like, is it Kettle Chips? Is it Frito-Lay or Pepsi or whoever else? Are you allowed to tell us?
Not really specific, okay. but we deliver to the majority of the nationwide brands.
Interesting. I actually did not know that about you guys. That's fascinating. As you probably know, right? We you know, typically interview your kind of stereotypical, you know, Silicon Valley, you know, New York-based tech startups and whatnot. So having someone in the agricultural space is definitely very new, very exciting, you know, pretty differentiated for us. But that's awesome. I'd love to hear, is there anything special? Is there anything unique about doing finance and accounting for a farm, essentially, than, you know, any other industry like manufacturing or technology or anything else? Are there special considerations that you think about that probably someone in another sector or another industry probably doesn't have to?
Yeah, that's a really good question. There's a lot of things that impact agriculture that don't really touch other industries. You know, a big one would be for the size of our organization. Usually we would be all accrual basis tax accounting, and we're actually cash basis. That's something that we, you know, was afforded to us as an industry, and it adds complexity, but adds, you know, a lot of flexibility as well. So, you know, we still manage all of our managerial books are accrual. So we actually still, you know, do everything accrual basis and then convert to cash basis once we start getting towards the end of the year and working with our CPAs to get our tax preparation going. So that's probably one of the biggest ones. The other is, you know, there's lots of different regulatory things that we deal with. You know, farms are pretty complex anymore. So we have lots of different licensing. You know, we have things to manage with all the different states that we deliver to. So, you know, managing our nexus and just keeping tabs on all those different things. You know, usually you think of a farm and they might, you know, grow in one state and deliver to another. And, you know, with our footprint, we deliver to, I believe it's over 25 different states. So lots of combinations of where the products come from and where they go to. So a lot of considerations when it comes to the trucking side of things, making sure that we're complying with all the local regional laws and the places that we operate, and just kind of keeping tabs on all those different things. And, you know, this year, especially, inflation is hitting us pretty quickly. And, you know, I think a lot of the other industries, this will be, you know, a major factor of CPI in months to come, but we're already seeing it in our inputs. So, you know, we have pretty wide supply chains. It takes a lot to grow a crop. You know, we don't have just 20 vendors that we get products from. You know, we have hundreds and thousands of vendors, and, you know, working with all of them to make sure that all of our inputs are coming in, all of our inputs are, you know, available. That's been something really tough, as a lot of industries have seen, but, you know, especially with the war in Ukraine right now, and then the sanctions against Russia, it's really making different types of fertilizer, different inputs, very difficult to get. And then when you can get them, the prices increase dramatically. So, you know, trying to manage that and, you know, all the other things that we still deal with on a regular basis, like weather. You know, that's one of the things that when you look at manufacturing financials, you have a pretty well established, you know, set of inputs, set of outputs, and you might have a little bit of scrap. And, you know, we could have, you know, all the dollars for our inputs, and due to a weather event, you know, our scrap or our shrink or our, you know, lack of product available to ship might be 50% of what it was the year before with even more expensive inputs. So kind of having that variability with weather is something that's pretty tricky. And, you know, we still manage everything on a cost per unit basis to try to get, you know, our cost of production in front of our managers. So we're managing, you know, each unit that we're able to produce. But, you know, you could have a weather event that increases your cost of production, you know, twofold because your yield just dropped by half, but your inputs didn't change. So a lot of different things that we're managing in that regard.
You know, this is something that I feel like I would often listen to in finance class, and I have like some nebulous sense of, oh, yeah, of course, like farmers protect themselves by XYZ. But I got to ask you, in order to protect yourself against, you know, some of these events and inflation and, you know, spikes in inputs and whatnot, are you guys buying and selling, you know, agricultural futures? And are you guys trading weather derivatives? And are you doing all of this crazy stuff that I feel like years ago I read about, you know, in finance class to protect yourself against inflation?
Yeah, we're doing some of those things. We have commodity futures for energy, and energy is, you know, more than just diesel, but, you know, all the energy used by our suppliers to, you know, apply products to the fields, things like that. We're also trading in corn and soybean futures to help us, you know, manage our cost of our land rent. So we're doing a few different things there that can help us be, you know, 12 or 24 months out as far as locking up pricing and managing against a known price versus an unknown price. And then the other thing, you know, the last few years, as I think a lot of other industries are doing, is, you know, we got so used to having products or inputs available, you know, things like just-in-time inventory and, you know, using the Toyota production system model, that, you know, the last couple of years we've kind of learned, hey, we need a little bit more flex in the system. We need a little bit more, you know, inventory to be able to manage not being able to get a product for a few months at a time. So, you know, we're starting to look at what kinds of inventories do we need to mitigate those risks in the short term, but then also, you know, working up the supply chain and figuring out when's the best time of year to deliver things like fertilizer or some of our different chemicals, and having the right inventories available to be able to take deliveries.
That's incredible. You know, because I always think, or, you know, sometimes people, you know, we'll go on Bloomberg, we'll go and look at the charts and we'll look at the supply chain disruption and whatnot. But it seems like, you know, some amount of hedging and financial, you know, derivatives is able to protect you a little bit, right, around some of the shocks in today's world. So that you're not completely just kind of losing your sleep and stressed out. Is that like a fair characterization? Is that like you're actually, you know, there is a lot of disruption, there is all this inflation, and but you're able to at least partially protect yourself against that?
Yeah, partially. I mean, don't get me wrong, we definitely still lose lots of sleep with different issues and weather, like I mentioned. But yeah, we have, part of the advantage is the diverse locations. So, you know, if we have a rain event in one location, you know, the chances are we're not going to have it at every location every year. So that helps mitigate, you know, some of the risks that we do have. And having an asset-based transportation division, you know, we have the resources available to maybe shift between different locations and provide that as a service to our customers. That really helps some of those things. The other one is, you know, we're kind of on an 18-month crop cycle. So we plant some of our early planted states, you know, in January of one year. And then we, in the northern areas or the cooler, more moderate climates like Michigan, Nebraska, we're able to store potatoes and we can ship those potatoes all the way through May or June the following year. So that really makes an 18-month cycle. So it does buy you some time to be able to, you know, get out ahead of different input issues or, you know, different supply issues that the industry might be seeing, and, you know, be able to react to those things rather than just having, you know, one location that harvests for 5-6 weeks out of the year and then you're not able to extend a shipping window or, you know, go to some other location to help shore things up for your customers.
I love it. I love it. So it sounds like you've got some geographic diversity that's getting you, you know, some diversification of risk. And it sounds like because of the length of the growing cycle, you also have some intertemporal almost kind of arbitrage, I guess, where you can move stuff around in time to kind of attenuate some of these risks. That's really cool. I could talk about this topic forever. I find this to be fascinating, but let's maybe bring it back to FinOps. Let me ask you, how's the team? Like, how many folks are working on all of the, you know, the tax, the accounting, the financials, as well as, you know, trading some of these derivatives? What does your team actually look like on a day-to-day basis? How many folks are there, et cetera? What do they all do?
Yeah, so we have a pretty lean team for the size of our organization. So we have, you know, our AP, AR, treasury, fixed assets, those are all supported by myself and two other team members that sit here in our headquarters office in Southwest Michigan. We have one person that's devoted to, you know, payroll and benefits. And, you know, we have a few other team members that are on other teams that aren't, you know, considered the finance IT team. That's kind of what we call it internally. We kind of roll the two together, but they're able to support with things like accounts payable or accounts receivable remotely from other farm locations. So we're able to tap into, you know, maybe some talent that is sitting in a farm in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan that normally wouldn't have enough work to support, you know, kind of like a traditional office manager type role. Now we can, you know, put 30 or 40% of the finance IT functions or accounting functions on their plate. And it really becomes a win-win-win. They're able to, you know, maybe get a higher compensation than they normally would in just that office manager role. And we're able to kind of spread different activities out across other locations from my team and add, you know, accounting controls and things like that by having, you know, more people. It's not necessarily all full-time people, but portions of other people's times because we've been able to digitize and do a lot of these different things. You know, beyond that, we have, you know, a strong IT team. We have an IT manager that, you know, works a lot on, you know, the back end stuff, but then also, you know, more on the front end, building out the, you know, some of the financial reports and the operational reports from our shipping software that we use and, you know, building some of the automations that we're using to move data back and forth between our accounting and finance systems and systems like RAMP and bringing that data into our accounting package. And then we also have, you know, a really strong CPA team that we work with for our financial reviews and then our tax. You know, there's a lot of things that are unique to agriculture, like we talked about earlier, for on the tax side of things. So we have a CPA firm that, you know, a big portion of what they do is agriculture, and they focus a lot on, you know, how to support clients like us that have these unique things and a unique entity structure and kind of a big and complex entity structure. Just with the age of the organization, you know, being around almost 80 years, we have some extra entities or disregarded entities, but still have some reasons to keep them around for, you know, tax reporting purposes and then just more, you know, reporting requirements in having all those entities as well.
It sounds like you guys full kind of embrace distributed work and kind of multi-office work even before like the rest of the world went full remote. That's awesome. You're able to leverage, you know, folks across different offices, across different functions. Any specific tools or vendors or software, anything you want to call out that's really helped you guys, you know, work together, collaborate, communicate across the different offices and across different work streams? And we'd love to hear about what your tech stack looks like and, you know, what you've liked and what you haven't liked.
Yeah. So we have, you know, lots of different systems that we use. You know, a few years ago, we came to an inflection point and we thought about going, you know, full-blown cloud-based ERP, or do we keep doing what we were doing? And we got pretty fortunate that the system that we have been using for a long time, it's called Sage 300 ERP. It's a little more old school. It's an on-prem server that sits right here at headquarters, but it's very extensible. So we can integrate with it in a lot of different ways, not just imports and exports, but build an API around it. And then, you know, build some smart integrations so that when we we pull in something like the CSV export from Ramp, we can have our business logic added within that integration step and have it start doing different things for us to make sure everything's hitting the right GL account code, you know, maybe rewriting the GL account code that's commonly misentered by a user, some different things there. So it's not only just, you know, data moving back and forth, but it's adding an extra layer of value add within that integration step. So we've found some really cool tools within there. You know, other systems that we've used is a documentation system that, you know, a lot of our vendors are still very old school, being in agriculture. You know, our landlords that we work with and even some, you know, big suppliers are still a little more old school and send in paper documents or, you know, just PDF documents rather than using like an EDI or an API to send us information. So we can actually attach documentation at every layer of our accounting system, all the way from, you know, the vendor ID to individual GL transactions, GL adjustments, AP transactions. We can associate a document to any layer within the system. And that makes it very easy for, you know, somebody to go on vacation and then be able to, you know, pull up a vendor and see all that vendor's information when they're backfilling someone that's out that week, rather than all of that, you know, living within, you know, an email system that they might not have had access to. You know, there's other systems we use. We use Microsoft Teams to do a lot of communication, and that helps with kind of that historical information. So, you know, our accounting team has our Microsoft Teams team that's in there. And anytime we add somebody new to the team or an intern for the summer, we're able to allow them access and they can, you know, see the historical conversation and everything that's been talked about. So being able to search through that information and that communication provides a ton of value to such a distributed team that we do have.
I'd love to know, just in terms of your day-to-day, I can only imagine, I mean, what percent, and I'm trying to create this pie chart in my mind, okay, what percent of your time is spent on kind of day-to-day stuff that will always happen day in and day out? What percent of your day is seasonal stuff, right? So, you know, year-end accounting, taxes and whatnot, and also just harvest-related work. And then what percent of your time is on more longer-term projects, maybe that spans over the course of, you know, weeks or months, but is not necessarily seasonal. I don't even know if that's comprehensive. I don't know. But those are kind of the three buckets of finance-related work that I have in my mind. You know, how would you break that down?
Yeah, that's a tough one to answer. You know, for how small of a team we are, you know, I do still get in a lot to the day-to-day, which I love being able to jump in and help with, you know, just a simple AP transaction if, you know, someone else is working on some other things or there's just a need for someone to take care of that right now. So I love being able to still be able to do that. I kind of think of it as, you know, flying the plane. You know, a lot of times when you think of 30,000 feet up, that's the long-term multi-year planning type stuff. And then, you know, you swoop down to 200 feet, you know, kind of like a crop duster does in our industry, and you go take care of an AP transaction. So, you know, there's days where it's fun to do that. There's days where, you know, you want to focus on the 30,000 and you got to swoop down to 200 to go take care of a few things. But I'd say different times of the year, you know, from December through March, you know, the long-term seasonal stuff, that's probably about 70 or 80% of it. That's, you know, getting ready for year end, trying to get accounts closed up in December. And then, you know, once things are closed up, all the balance sheet items are reconciled and everything's ready to send up to the CPAs for review. You know, that's a huge portion of January. And, you know, we take a little bit longer to close maybe than most organizations. We don't necessarily have that need for the quick close. We'd rather, you know, have accurate information. We can still provide, you know, day in and day out financial information, just not necessarily closed up for the month. So, you know, that affords us the ability to spend a little bit more time and not have to put that stress on the team to get things closed up and book all your accruals for, you know, the next month, you know, within 2 days or anything like that. So that is really helpful, kind of the way we've structured things. But, you know, other times of the year, yeah, it's, you know, budgeting season kind of overlaps with tax season and year end. So that long term or that more seasonal stuff, you know, during those months of the year is about 80% of it. You know, the rest of the year is where it's probably a good, you know, 30, you know, or a third between all the different things, which is a pretty good balance. So, you know, mid August, you know, the farms are pretty busy. Our team's a little bit slower. So it is more focusing on the long-term stuff and what kind of systems can we be putting in place now to get things ready for when we get to that crunch time more towards year end, and what kind of new integrations can we build, or what kind of additions can we make to our current integrations to make the data flow smoother and not have to, you know, adjust a file before importing or something like that.
I always like to end with this question. 2022, you know, rest of the year, what are you most looking forward to? What are you most excited about?
Yeah, there's a lot of things that are coming down the pike, you know, outside from, you know, all the inflation issues, supply chain issues, things like that. The stuff that is exciting is in agriculture, we've been doing, you know, sustainability and regenerative ag for, you know, as long as I can remember. But now there's recognition coming from customers and from consumers that, you know, they want farms to be focused on those things. And, you know, a lot of it we have been doing, and it just makes good business sense a lot of times, and being more conscious with the products that we use on the farm and the energy we use to grow the crops, it usually translates into something that makes economical sense. But we're starting to see that recognition from customers and consumers, and it's putting more focus on it. But we're excited that people are starting to look at that. And, you know, we see that as another way for us to differentiate ourselves and, you know, taking that challenge on and being even better at doing more with less. So we're excited about, you know, the initiatives that we have for sustainability and regenerative ag or regen ag that we're doing this coming year. There's some other really cool things, you know, along with that, Tesla Semi is something that we've been keeping our eye on. And, you know, we have a particular trucking lane that we think is very applicable. It has a good elevation change in between where our farm is and our customer is. And we have a dedicated fleet that is a loaded truck when we have an elevation decrease, and then an empty truck when we go back up to the farm. So, you know, something like a Tesla Semi with regenerative braking, you know, could be very energy efficient for that trucking lane, let alone, you know, the uptime that we would have and, you know, the carbon emissions that we would be saving, being able to implement something like that on that trucking lane with the miles that we run. It's just a great fit as long as we can, you know, get the payload that we need to still be economical in there. So we're, you know, investigating that and looking to see if that's something that can make sense for us. Another one is Starlink. So I guess I got to jump on the Elon train a little bit, but you know, our locations are not in easy to get to places, and it's not easy to get internet there either. So, you know, this last mile internet problem kind of plagues our farm locations, and we've been able to make all this new digitization and new technology work. We have some operational programs that we use that can work offline and sync up a database, but the faster we can get, you know, good, solid, fast internet at all of our farm locations, the more that we can, you know, shift towards full digitization and not having to sync up an offline database. And then the last one is, you know, a new feature that Ramp has announced is the bill pay for the traditional CSV export user. So that is how we export data into our on-prem accounting package. And we're looking forward to leveraging that software and, you know, seeing everything that we see on the receipts matching side of things and all the OCR and the smarts that you have built into to detecting those and matching up with a credit card transaction. You know, seeing that same thing with more broad vendor management and, you know, pulling in invoices and getting those paid in a efficient way with either a paper check, which, you know, a lot of agriculture still is relying on those paper checks, or an ACH that has a little more detail when we send the ACH versus kind of the traditional NACHA type file that we're doing with our current treasury solution.
I promise you the Tesla Semi with the potential energy arbitrage, I think that's way cooler than what we're building for you on the AP. But I appreciate that. I appreciate the comments. That is definitely that's definitely the first time I've heard about the trucking thing. That's so cool. I just want to leave with one closing remark, which is, look, Josh, thanks so much for kind of believing in us. You know, you were one of our earliest customers, and, you know, it's been a tremendous pleasure to have you. on our podcast. And it's been really, really cool to learn more, you know, a little bit more about your farms and kind of the agricultural sector and what you do. This is, it's been tremendous having you here.
Thank you. I appreciate the time today, Alex. And, you know, it's a two-way street when it comes to the RAMP relationship. You know, early on, we requested features and worked with the team there, you know, on the engineering side, and they built those features out for us. And, you know, it really felt like you guys were listening and building things out that were maybe just specific to us, that, you know, us being agriculture versus a startup, maybe not other clients would have been able to utilize, but you guys jumped on it and built it out. And it's definitely a two-way street that, you know, we've had great luck working with your team and, you know, seeing all the benefits that RAMP has. And that's why we, you know, stuck with you guys and we're there from the beginning and haven't looked back since.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. It really helps to spread the word. Until next time, this is FinOps Today from RAMP.